Game On on 2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Monday the 23rd of August and this is Game On. Coming up today, peeking at the peak, Niall Moran will talk us through Limerick's near perfect performance.
Ian Lynch again, little chip to Rod Hegarty. Oh, magnificent! Two against two, gone inside, unmarked momentarily, it's Aaron Gillan! Brilliant!
And Alan Colley, our referees, now letting too much slide. Some big signings are starting to make their mark, and Man United's seat at the top of the Premier League is gone after 1 week.
James to put it on a plate for Lukaku. He scores his first Chelsea goal. He couldn't miss it, and it's taken less than 15 minutes.
Plus in golf, Gary Murphy on Leona Maguire making more history as she's picked for the Solheim Cup team, and Shane Lowry is on the course and in the mix at the PGA Tour.
Game On 2FM.
You can text us on 555-51552 even, or tweet at Game On 2FM. The Northern Trust has got underway this afternoon after being rained delayed yesterday. 9 inches of rain have fallen in Maine since Saturday afternoon, so they're doing pretty well to get it going. Rory McIlroy is out on course. He's played 6 holes and he's 3 under par and has brought himself to 9 under for the tournament. Seamus Power has recovered from a bogey on the third with a birdie on the fourth. He's still at 6 under par but needs to climb the leaderboard a little more, and Shane Lowry won't tee off for another 25 minutes ish. But Marie Crowe, as a Clare woman, you must have taken delight at Limerick's performance yesterday afternoon.
I'm not sure I'd use the word delight now. Envy,
even as a hurling fan, it was magic to watch. Go on.
Yeah, look, it was an amazing performance. Absolutely, they were brilliant. Like, they just blew Cork away. They were phenomenal. They were a force. I love the physicality that they bring, and they mix it with the hurling, and you know, just they never relent. They're just go the whole time. They're unbelievable. But from looking across the River Shannon at them, you know, from pure selfish point of view, you have to be a little bit envious of what they have, because
a little bit.
Okay, a lot. But I think it's because that it's not just what they have on the hurling pitch that is what people are going to be chasing. Look, they're brilliant hurlers. They're, as I said, they're physically, they're specimens, they're athletes, they're fantastic. But it's their setup, it's their structures, it's their management ticket that they have. It's the fact that they're connecting so well with their supporters. It's just so harmonious at the moment. And it's all of those things together yield these amazing performances on the pitch. And it's so hard to get everything right. Like, if... Usually, like, you know, in our situation, there's rows with the county board, you know, there's supporters
Harmony
who are...
Is not top of the pile in Clare, really, is it?
It hasn't been for a while, but you're looking then across at them and you can see what they can achieve by getting everything right from the ground up and building it and developing their players and building on their underage success. And, you know, they're obviously very well resourced and financed with JP McManus, and look, wouldn't begrudge them that. Limerick had their tough times like a lot of the other counties in Munster did, but they have created something wonderful, not just for that group of players, but for everyone in Limerick. And it's brilliant for them. It's like my dad taught in Limerick for years, that, you know, I only live 15 minutes from Limerick. It's so close to Clare, and everybody in Clare would have a bit of a connection to Limerick, so you're happy for them from that sense. But at the same time, you want to find a way to try and replicate what they're doing and try and achieve that success as well. The template is there, though. I mean, if you break it down, it does probably look easy enough to put those pieces in place to build something like they have built. But everybody knows it's not as easy as that. And they've put a huge amount of work in. They've got the right people involved. They have brilliant volunteers like everybody around the country, but they obviously have them doing the right thing. And they're developing brilliant hurlers and they're reaping their rewards. And I've heard so many people say it over the last few days, Ruby, make sure you're enjoying it because it doesn't last forever. The thing I'd love to know, though, where is it in the cycle? Is this the start of it? Is this the middle of it? Is it coming to an end? Looking yesterday, it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree with you. I hope it doesn't end anytime soon. I enjoyed Dublin for what they were, and people were saying, oh, split the county, they're too dominant, they're too whatever. Kilkenny back in the early noughties, what was it, 06, 07, 08, 09, 11, 12. brilliance, dominance, and what they had was a core of magnificent players, and I will enjoy it as a fan. We're unlikely to have anything like it in Kildare, so I might as well enjoy what everyone else has, but I thought it was magnificent to watch. The first half, it was a game of two halves, but it was one half, and we'll have much more informed opinion than mine on it, but as a casual spectator, I thought yesterday's first half was spectacular to watch.
Yeah, you couldn't but just sit back, admire them, enjoy it, and say fair play to them, because they worked really hard to get to where they are.
Just imagine if your dad, when he was teaching Limerick, decided to move to Limerick. You could be enjoying this even more.
Ruby, you don't say that. That's like saying, imagine if you'd moved to Dublin, like Kildare people moving to Dublin. Where you're from is where you're from, and you're proud of it. And people always say, you know, you shouldn't, if you're in the press box, you shouldn't be saying where you're from and all the rest. But I think that where you're from makes you the person that you are. And if I hadn't had the experiences that I had following Clare Hurling, and going to matches with my dad, being on the sideline in the 90s when Clare were getting hammered at the time, and then experiencing the success in the 90s, I probably wouldn't even be doing this job right now, because without those great days following Clare Hurling, I don't know if I'd have loved the sport
as
much.
And the pain of the losses, Marie.
The pain of the losses, exactly. You have to feel the pain of the losses to enjoy the highs of the wins, Ruby. Anyway, we'll be talking to Niall Moore in a little bit about that, and I'm sure Niall will be reveling as well in the delight of it.
I think is the word.
Yeah,
you're looking for.
Thanks, Ruby. Racing the weekend, there was quite a lot going on, actually.
There was a brilliant success in York in the Ebor for Johnny Murta and Sonny Boy Liston, and he got a great ride from Ben Cohn in the lashing rain on the Naismire on Saturday afternoon. Biggest, richest handicap in Europe. Well plotted plan by Johnny, but I must say, listening to his interview after the race on Racing TV when he was speaking to Lydia Hislop, where he was talking about Ben Cohn and the development of his riders and how he sees the riders and his jockeys as such a part of his team and how to stand behind them and deal with them. And, you know, there's been a lot in racing lately about social media abuse for jockeys, and Johnny, how he deals with Ben Cohn and those situations. And it was fascinating to listen to him. Let's actually give him a shout and see if he'll come on, because he had a really good take on it, and I thought that was really good to listen to.
That's actually something that you don't hear spoken about very often, is the fact that there could be somebody there kind of managing the jockeys, because you always see them as kind of lone entities, really, that they're just doing their thing, and it must be very difficult and isolating.
Yeah, they pretty much are. Now, I was very fortunate. I always had my father, and who was always on the end of the phone. It was the first phone call I ever made. But Johnny was talking about that, and, you know, ringing Ben, and in the days to put his arm around him and the days to give out to him. And it was good to listen to, and how much he has their backs and trusts them, and they're in it together. And long may it continue, because it's always very easy to blame the rider and replace them, but Johnny seems to think he has their backs anyway.
Oh, that is very good to hear. Right, let us go back to the hurling now. Niall Moran is standing by, but first, let's remind ourselves of how yesterday's final unfolded.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time.
Well, that was an incredibly powerful moment as 40,000 people stood facing the tricolour in Croke Park to sing Aurá na Bhí. The band now leaving the field. They'll be back at half-time to perform Lord of the Dance. Fergal Horgan about to throw the ball in. He's the Tipperary official. And away we go. The All-Ireland final is underway here in Croke Park, the 134th.
So don't stop me now.
Points scored already. He's on the 13-metre line, just trying to give the hand pass through to Hegarty. Hegarty firing the shot in. Limerick have got a goal here. 2 minutes gone. Last year's hurler of the year, Garrod Hegarty, fires the ball to net. The early stages, the Jets were in for a cracker.
Just a bit of naivety there from Luke Mead. Tried a backhand pass, missed the target. Keen Lynch gets it. Hegarty inside the 21. Finished brilliantly low past Collins. Super start by Limerick.
Declan Hannan has played the ball down towards Peter Casey. Getting the better there of Niall O'Leary. Getting a little bit of space to get a shot away. About winning it again.
Yeah, and they're dominating this quarter again already. 3-1.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time.
Sideline with Keane Lynch. Lynch had his jersey pulled there by Mark Coleman. The play continues out to Hegarty. Hegarty with a dangerous sort of move here. He's up to the 30 metre line. Fire the ball into the net. Hegarty with a second goal of the All Ireland final. He points his hand and his finger towards the sky. He knows it's not even half time. With Keane Lynch. Lynch had his jersey pulled there by Mark Coleman. The play continues out to Hegarty. Hegarty with a dangerous sort of move here. He's up to the 30 metre line. Fire the ball into the net. Hegarty with a second goal of the All Ireland
last place to win the free. Keane Lynch, what a hurler, what a talent. Maybe hurler of the year in waiting, 6 points to play today.
Aaron Gillan for the free from outside the 45, close to the Hogan stand sideline. Will it be the perfect finish? Noel comes back off the post. Cork desperately trying to clear their lines, and the referee calls. Team ever to win back-to-back All-Irelands. It's a third title under the reign of John Kiely. Kieran Kingston goes in to embrace with John Kiely and to offer him congratulations. The Green Giants still rule the hurling world and nobody can get near them. Cork certainly couldn't get near them today, and for the 10th time in their history, Limerick are the All-Ireland champions.
Now, we have to give Barry O'Neill from Sunday Sport a big thank you for sharing that with us, and of course Pádraic Lodge and Shane McGrath as well for their brilliant commentary. I'm delighted to say now that one very happy Limerick man, Niall Moran, is with us on the line. Niall, a third All-Ireland under John Kiely, as Pádraic said there. Are they getting sweeter?
Marie, good afternoon to you, and a sober Limerick man at the moment, Marie. I'd say I'd say the celebration's well underway. Look, it's this, even listening to the montage back there, sure, the goosebumps would be there. Look, we're in dreamland really at the moment. I don't think anyone in their wildest dreams could have envisaged this, even having won the first All-Ireland. So it's just incredible, and sure, like, again, hats off to everybody involved. It's like they're legends. They've been legends already, but they're most definitely, after yesterday, their greatness is assured.
Niall, it was a game of two halves, but we'll go back to the first half and the beginning, the opening 10 minutes, and it's 1-1 after not that long. But in your wildest dreams, could you have foreseen what was about to come from Limerick?
I suppose, look, in the first quarter, Ruby, you said like it was turning into a bit of a shootout. Look, okay, Cork were 5 points down at the water break, 2-8-1-6, and you said, Jesus, this is playing into Cork's bowl, Limerick don't want this. But again, like that second quarter push on this occasion, like, and to come here, like after 30 minutes, they make a 3-18 on the board. Like, that is just incredible. Even in this day and age of such high scoring, that was incredible. But I just think, really, again, they just sucked the life, they sucked the hope out of Cork, and the more the game went. And look, the overall reflection, yeah, 16-point beating on the day, that was probably reflective of where it was. But I just think maybe Cork just dropped the heads. For a lot of guys, it was either first ever time sampling in All-Ireland, and look, your heart has to go out to them as well, like, because they probably just didn't come up with their A game, but maybe exposed for a little bit of naivety as well.
I think the fact that everybody is just sitting back and talking about how brilliant Limerick is, or rather than actually the competitiveness of the game, probably does tell us everything that we need to know about what happened yesterday. And the fact as well that people are now wondering, like myself, what's next, or what more can this team give, Niall? Like, you're obviously teaching there, you see the lads coming through, you know what the conveyor belt is like. Nicky Quaid, the oldest player in the Limerick team, he just turned 31. None of the rest of them will turn 30 before the 2023 championship, says Malachy Clerkin in the Irish Times. It's phenomenal, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, look, it is phenomenal, and the age profile, you'd imagine, would be very, very helpful. But I suppose this is where maybe we kind of have to check ourselves a little bit. I suppose when people think back to yesterday, it was very similar to obviously the 08 All-Ireland, and coming away from that match, you couldn't have envisaged anybody coming next or near Kilkenny. But all of a sudden, Tipperary emerged within 3 or 4 months of serious contenders. And I do think that there are counties out there who, as we speak, are plotting, and there's players as we speak that are out busting themselves trying to get themselves up to that level, because ultimately when teams set a bar, everyone else aspires to get there, and with everything else they will get there. But really, Marie, I suppose looking at it from a Limerick person as a perspective, like, there is probably a series of short term and long term challenges, to be honest. One of the short term challenges, and you appreciate as a mother, is trying to find babysitters. Looking at it there at the end of the game, it looked like one of the biggest pressures in the country there with lads. I was just wondering, in fairness, at least you got the hour and a half to play the match, because it's better on babysitting duty now for the rest of the winter. But look, there is short-term challenges. Look, teams are obviously going to come up to try and match you. There'll still be slight concerns about maybe the depth of the squad and depth of the quality. So I suppose next year's league, it'll be interesting to see more lads get their head. And then maybe obviously as well, Marie, like, there is long-term challenges for a county like Limerick, you know, different to your own, Clare, Ruby's glaring football. Like, you don't get these periods of dominance across a 50-year period. So I suppose the issue here for us here in Limerick is we got to go back to the drawing board as of now when you're on top, and not have a situation arise when these generation of players pass through that we don't have anything to replace it. And that's really, whatever about the hard work coming out of kind of failure or out of kind of dramatic situations, which probably happened in our case, the hard work when you're on top, people are, people don't always want to get their hands as dirty having sampled success. But even just as I'm here speaking to you, I'm watching here our under-9s are training below in the field, and there's massive, massive numbers and very enthusiastic coaches. So you just be hoping that another 6-7 years' time that these will be the next generation coming through.
God, if you couldn't get a crowd of kids out this evening, you'd be in some trouble. But you say there about strength and depth. Yet if you look at the Kilkenny team back in the end of the noughties, that team, you had Noel Hickey, Jackie Tyrrell, Tommy Walsh, Brian Hogan, JJ Delaney, five of the back six. They were always in that team. So did Kilkenny really have the strength and depth either? Or did they just maximise the talent like Limerick have in Finn, Morrissey, Nash, Burns, Hannon and Hayes? Like, it's kind of parallel.
Yeah, there are similar parallels, but I suppose the one thing, and again, I kind of repeat myself on a number of occasions here, I do think we're taking our leaf out of the Kilkenny book. You couldn't but take it out of them. And one of the things with Cody was every league, there was always two or three new guys, and like the likes of John Tennyson, James Ryle. These guys came in, they won a couple of All-Irelands, injury probably deprived them thereafter, so we're probably looking for the same. Look, that is the challenge. Again, these couple of weeks are to savour, but I know the club championship starts here in a fortnight's time, and there's a lot of guys and a lot of clubs that may not necessarily be part of academies or this, and that they will want to put their hands up. And they'll be needed, because, look, let's face it, even early yesterday, maybe Graham Mull, I'm not so sure will we have, how many more years we'd have of him. He's given a massive service. It's, again, with kids and everything else, life changes for some of these guys. So you do have to keep the conveyor belt coming. And again, look, we see our Cork, I know, is disappointing from yesterday, but Jesus, that minor team that played on Saturday, they were, I think it's been said by a lot of people, they're one of the best minor teams I have seen. And probably what's even more worrying is the nature of the likes of St. Finbar's and the Glen, all the big old Cork clubs that powered them and were successful. They're now starting to provide all these players. So we would want to get the conveyor belt moving as quickly as possible again.
But just given the nature of the defeat, Niall, you'd have to think that it'll be a little while before a team can match what Limerick were capable of. And even at yesterday's, looking at yesterday's performance, we still don't even know if they've peaked yet, if there's more to come from them. But let's look at Cork, because what Kieran Kingston described it as was trying to stop a tide with a bucket. Where did they fall down? Like, what went so wrong for them?
Look, there was an element of systems failure. I know I spoke to yourselves on Thursday, and where I felt Limerick really needed to go after was the puck outs and Patrick Collins. And look, in last year's league in 2019, I know Limerick probably might have spooked Galway a bit in the league in terms of putting them under pressure in the puck outs, and it happened again in the championship. And I think the same thing has happened with Cork this year. Limerick's probably spooked Patrick Collins and the Gaelic Rounds in the league match. And after the first 10 minutes when they had a fair deal of success, Limerick just pushed up that bit more. And look, again, he didn't know where to look, to be fair to the guy. If they went short, they're getting turned over. If they went long, Limerick was swamping the ball, and you can't kind of get that primary possession. So that was one issue. Look, again, maybe there was some questionable, like Darf Skibben, all-star midfielder, maybe not going through the best day in a form, but to put him to wing forward, I think straight away you deprived him of any hope of really producing the goods in the All-Ireland final. So I know there's things that they'll regret, but again, the key for Cork is they have to just keep calm. They have very good management and everything else, and they probably will add a good little bit more quality next year and the year after. And again, once they get their gander up, it's all red flags for everyone else.
I know Cork, this Cork team was described as a red tide and the pace they had up front, but where did that pace go yesterday? Because other than the early goal by Shane Kingston, you never really saw that speed.
No, but again, Ruby, if you don't have the ball, you have nothing left, you know what I mean? Your only speed isn't the whole pile used to when you're chasing shadows. And for a lot of that game yesterday, like, Cork were chasing shadows. And again, like, Limerick's athleticism, like, people have spoken about it, but they have huge pace as well as strength. And at no stage, I think there was even one incident there when the game was over. Robbie O'Flynn, one of the fastest men in the pitch, he went to take on Barry Nash, and they're coming in by the Davin stand, and Barry just stood him up left and right. It was akin to a basketball or kind of a point guard defence, kind of, and he'd come back. And again, Cork hadn't probably been used to that. And look, again, it was a learning curve for them too, because I think at the start of the year, if you'd said realistically, that Cork would be in an All-Ireland final, I think that would have been the measure of a very good year. So I don't think they can lose sight of that either.
If you have Garrod Hegarty running at you and he's got his eye on goal, how do you stop him, Noel? Is there a way?
Trip him up.
Jesus, yeah.
Trip him up.
Yeah, trip him up or show him a couple of ice creams or something, because he's an animal, he's a beast, like he's a gazelle. I know the boys that we have, and you're playing against them at club level and you're training with them here in the club, like physically these boys are absolutely Adonis. You'd just be looking and saying, where the hell do we go around for 14 or 15 years, and they're just animals in the peak of their powers. And again, maybe that is coming back to where we probably did get that head start 13, 14 years of age in terms of the movement, fundamental movement and conditioning at the academy level. And probably it's only now that you're seeing some of the counties, Cork and Galway, probably catching up to it. So, and that takes a bit of time to wash through. And look, it'll wash through, but will it be next year? I still think you'd have to put Limerick top of the pile for next year. Like,
is that what they were doing when they were starting out? Like, were they that professional that they were developing, as you said, the fundamental movement skills? Did they have those sort of scientific resources in that academy for the kids at that age, really, when you think about it, in their early teens?
Yeah, there's a double whammy, okay? Like, and again, a lot has been made of Limerick at academy level and schools level. But I think you have to acknowledge, like, that we just got a once-in-a-generation group of players. And even if you look at the bloodlines going through them, Ruby, appreciate it more than most, but, like, Jesus, the bloodlines are all there. You've Hegarty, Nash, Quaid, do you know what I mean? There's Carey and Lynch, like, do you know what I mean? So, like, as in, it's a freak group as well. And, like, there's lots of teams that are doing the same work at academy level, but you can only get so much extra out of lads' natural ability. At the end of the day, once guys have that natural ability, it's how you harness it. And maybe in a Limerick scenario, I think that's probably where we learn from the mistakes that were maybe made in the noughties, when, again, you probably had a similar vein of underage form. But I don't think we never progressed in any sort in comparison. So, look, if you don't have the raw materials, there's only so much you can get out of them. And I think, John, we've been very, very lucky. We're not foolish enough to think that this day will last forever. We know that an end is coming, but the key to it is that an end can come in time. But the key to it is that we don't allow it to drag on for too long, as has happened in Cork's case.
You mentioned bloodlines, Niall, and I think it's even more predominant in humans. You can imagine the upbringing of those names you mentioned, sitting in the stand, listening to the conversations, in the back of the car on the way home from matches, listening to the tactical analysis that they were listening to as kids. We can all have opinions on games and what we see and what we thought happened, but when you're listening to people like that, that ingrains in their brains. And that, to me, is what you could see yesterday. They played at a tactical level that was incredible to watch. And the movement of Keane Lynch, but his brain, he was so far in front. To me, the tactical noose was exceptional.
Yeah, the core was the tactical. Like, again, I said it before, like, we don't know ourselves here. We genuinely have to pinch ourselves. And I've even met some of the lads that played in the 90s and lads my own generation there, and said, how did this happen? Like, This is like once the clock hits 12 o'clock, we're going to wake up and we're going to realise, Jesus, no, we're sitting in the doldrums, like, you know. But look, you're talking even about Keane, right? And I know, he drew the parallels to the Harry Potter. Like, Keane Lynch, like, when you saw him at 11 or 12 years of age, he stood out, like, red hair. Even when he was in first and second year in school, he was a rat tail that all the kids across the county, let alone the school, were trying to copy him. And, you know, I kind of compare him in some respects to maybe Simon Zeebo in rugby. Like, and Zeebo was one of these flair players, and it ultimately actually cost him in probably an Irish place, in that, you know what I mean, he wouldn't change his game and he ended up over in Racing. Whereas in Keane's case, no one's ever coached out of him. He's been let express himself. But then the other side to it is, when you look at Keane, even yesterday, I gave 6 points, but there was 2-5 came off him thereafter. But even a lot of his possession, he's like the oil in the chain the whole time, because he's taking up the ball in tight situations where the ball would normally get turned over and is getting turned over, and Keane is just opening the release valves and then other guys are coming onto it. And look, man, he's incredible. To think that his uncle was Kieran Carey and this guy has surpassed what Kieran Carey is at the age of 23 or 4, it's, you know what I mean, it's just crazy.
But it's all reaction. You watch him. To me, I watch brilliant sports people in every sphere. Soccer players, GA footballers, rugby players, jockeys, whatever it is, that always seem to have time. It's because they're working on reaction. They never have to think. And that's what he seems to be doing.
Yeah, he has a natural, but even I just heard a a snippet of an interview there with Andy Lee, the boxer, the local man here to us in Castleconnell, but he just, again, he was probably coming in with maybe an untrained eye to hurling, but he just said the one thing that struck him, and it was very, very simple, it was their execution of the basics on a consistent level. And I know the All Black mantra has always been best at basics, and I think when you look at Limerick, you spoke about the times they're getting the ball, like, once you make a mistake here, it's, you know what I mean, the ball is turned over. One of the things I always say to kids here is one touch, a score for us, two touches, a score for them. And again, in Cork, like, you just saw it when the pressure came on, they're just, the basics broke down under extreme pressure. Whereas that's where Limerick's training over the last number of years, everything is in a pressurised situation which super exceeds what they're going to experience in a match. And if you're training at that level, like, that's your level. And do you know what I mean? If no one else is going to try and get to it. So, again, I think it's at best the basics. And look, Limerick, they're not doing anything over and beyond the special, but it's just how they're executing everything on a consistent level is where they're differentiating themselves from all contenders.
They also have Paul Kinnear-Kinoyle as well. And I spoke to Ruby earlier on about being a little bit envious of the setup in Limerick. And just given the fact that Kinnear was with Clare as well when we won our last All-Ireland, it does make the envy that little bit more pronounced, knowing that we had him for a little while too. But just how good is he?
Well, we only sent him over to Emery just to kind of see how not to do things. And it's just that he was so good that, in fairness, like, you know what I mean, he couldn't butt. So he got all his good habits on Limerick. Look, he's incredible. I suppose it's obviously a passion of his. He's taking time out of his job, and he's probably devised a kind of a philosophy in it in terms of a college setup. Do you know what I mean? Look, the guy is incredible. He's a wizard. But again, he's been given license by John Kiley. Like, John has given him his head, and he trusts in him, and that comes through in everything. And look, if Paul was to move on, could it have a huge knock-on impact on the group? Of course. Like, how do you follow on after a guy, in fairness to him, who's probably the coach of the decade? And when you think that he went up against his predecessor in Donal O'Grady, who'd also been regarded as it, like, do you know what I mean? That's, again, testament to him. So, look, all the stars are probably aligned. We're very fortunate we have the financial input of Jason McManus, and you can't underestimate that, because there are counties out there that are just struggling for basic facilities, basic things that you need to get to that level. Like Limerick, or Sean O'Donnell on the video, you never hear much from him. The guy has every team, snaps is done on every team. He knows exactly what they're doing before they know it themselves. And then, obviously, you know, SNC, Mike Kiley, we're just very, very fortunate with where we're at. And it says hopefully it'll continue, but the key is that when the day comes when some of these guys move on, or John decides to move on, is that we have ready-made replacements to some degree that will keep us at that competitive level that we probably drifted off from last decade.
We are getting lots of positive reaction to Limerick and what they've achieved and their performance over the weekend, but there are a few people wondering about hurling from a broader point of view. One texter says getting beat by 16 points isn't good for hurling or the players. Discuss. What do you think, Noel?
Look, I think the key to it is we're looking at excellence. And again, it's up to everyone else to get to that level. We looked at it for Kilkenny for 10-12 years on a consistent level, and nobody thought we'd ever get to it. But I know from first-hand experience, anytime you ever played them, you always came away from it a better player, in the sense that you knew where you were deficient in. Any team you ever brought up to play, Kilkenny, be it club or schools or whatever else, they got their eyes opened, and they're always the better for it. So if it's Limerick's dominance that we're trying to chase here, and if that's that far ahead of the pack, teams will eventually get at them. So I wouldn't agree with you. I wouldn't agree with the listener on that. Is it not good for hurling? It's up to everyone else to catch up, but they will catch up, like, in time. But again, it's maybe just and the game also will evolve. Like, again, Limerick play a pattern, a style of game which in 5 years' time might be redundant. So, do you know what I mean? But it's up to somebody else. There's another Paul Kinnear in all these counties. There's plenty of Paul Kinnear and who are devising those plans. And it's just, again, once they have the raw materials, the executors, then, so.
Ruby, what do you reckon?
I agree with Niall. I'm not, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I don't agree with that text. I'm not the kind of person that thinks everyone should get a medal. And even at underage levels, there has to be winners, there have to be losers. And if you never learn how to lose, because life is all about disappointments. It'll be way more disappointments than there are highs. And I think, and I got plenty of beatings and injuries and things that went completely backwards in my career. But what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. And that'll be the same for the Cork team. They got hammered. They'll remember it. But that will drive them on. That's what I think. I completely agree with Niall Moran.
Well, I think Mayo are the perfect example of that. If you told Mayo a couple of years ago that they were going to go out and beat Dublin in an All-Ireland semi-final, that there would have been few people that would have believed them. But look at them now. And just one before we finish up as well, and Ruby, you like this one. Hurling is about perception. If you have to think about it, it's over. And Cork got caught thinking about it yesterday.
Reactions.
Before I go, I test for Ruby to agree with me on something there. I've been fortunate enough as a very, very average hurler and you know, that experience to get the chance to talk to you every Monday, and Jesus, the time's there. At least I claim to know a little bit more than Ruby on the hurling side, but now that he's agreeing with me,
I think it's definitely a fairy tale
ending to the weekend after that now, Mike.
That's for sure. I think that's probably the perfect way to end our hurling season. Niall Moran, thank you for a great season.
Thanks,
and
Niall.
We'll be back before we even know it. And we're going to take a very quick break now, and then we're back with soccer.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe, Ruby Walsh as well, and Alan Cawley has joined us in studio, and Stephen Kelly is on the phone. So we have a full house for our football chat, and it's good because it was a very interesting weekend of football, Alan Cawley. I did enjoy quite a lot of it, obviously Liverpool's win, but I enjoyed watching Arsenal and Chelsea, I have to say, yesterday. I know that you predicted Chelsea to go on and win the Premier League, but when you're looking for title contender, somebody to knock City off their perch, I think Chelsea really impressed over the weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I don't think it's something that you should be really shouting from the rooftops about beating Arsenal, Marie, but because we all know how poor Arsenal are. But in fairness, Chelsea were very impressive, and that man Lukaku, who we mentioned, could be the final piece of the jigsaw, because up to now we've all predicted that Chelsea could be the ones to overtake City, and they've obviously a brilliant squad. They've been very successful since Tuchel has come in, and he's taken to another level. But I think the signing of Lukaku really kind of, as I say, is the game changer in terms of looking at them as potential favourites to win the league. And they were so dominant yesterday, but as much as you want to praise Chelsea, it's hard to get away from just how poor Arsenal were, particularly that defensive area. And if we're going to be speaking about Lukaku, they're so weak defensively, Marie. Like, you look at Holding playing yesterday, Cedric, he didn't play last week, Chambers played it right full. Arsenal are an absolute shambles.
They're missing nine players, though.
I know, but the team he put out against Brentford, he completely changed and put in two or three other fellas yesterday, particularly in the back four when you look at Holding and obviously Cedric playing right full. Then you had Mari and Lukaku, who we all know is a big, strong physical player, and he will dominate a lot of centre halves, but he absolutely bullied them the whole way through. And Arsenal have major problems, but certainly in terms of Chelsea looking forward to win a league, they're very, very strong looking, Marie.
Stephen, that game was at the Emirates, yet it was reflective of one that was played at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea had all the position, the majority of the shots, all the passes, as good as they were, and Alan is alluding to it, but what exactly do Arsenal need to do?
Revamp most of their squad, to be honest. It's a complete turnaround, and Arteta, he's been given a bit of time there as well, and you just think that things aren't going out for him. But you know, the signings they're making are not signings that you really think are going to influence them and making them a better squad. Like, they're a shadow of the side they were. Like, when I think of Arsenal, I just think of the Henrys and the Vieiras and the Keons and all these guys, and they would never have let that happen. What Chelsea, like, the word bullied has been banned around, and you get to use quite a lot, but that was the epitome of being bullied in a football match. Like, it was ridiculous how poor they were, how weak they were. And for an Arsenal club, they seem so far off and so far removed from what they've been for, you know, for years gone by.
Just on Lukaku, Stephen, like, how do you play against somebody like him? He's so physical. He must be an absolute nightmare. Do you think he's gone out there now with a point to prove, the fact that it is his second time coming back playing for Chelsea?
Oh, absolutely. He wants to make sure, and he's determined. You see all his interviews beforehand, and you know, the build up to it. He's determined to make this work, to prove that he is a star, and he's gonna change things at that club. And you know what? The real test is going to be Van Dijk. I would love if this clash came a little bit longer, Van Dijk had three or four more games under his belt, because then it'd be a proper test to see how physically he can be, and if he can, you know, muscle someone like that. But you know, when you're playing against someone that's got that stature, you can't get into a wrestling match with him. You can't try and pin him or get close to him. You have to keep your arms length away. Like, I've played centre back enough times against guys that are much bigger than me, and you have to just be clever. You have to box clever, keep away from him. Don't let them pin you. And he's quick as well, so you have to give yourself a yard so that he doesn't run past you. You know, everything that Arsenal didn't do, you know, they played into his hands and they got tight to him and he was just able to spin them, set balls off and then get his arm out. You know, it was pathetic at times.
Whatever, Murray, about somebody obviously trying to mark him from behind and him being bigger and stronger than you, what we've seen with Murray, you have to stop the passes at source. So they had no protection whatsoever in front of him. If I was a centre half marking Lukaku and you wouldn't be able to deal with him physically, you need someone sitting in front of you who will actually stop the balls. If you look at the amount of times and simple little passes, but straight through, breaking the two centre midfielders and straight into Lukaku's feet, straight away you're on the back foot then, because as Stephen said, he can roll you himself or he can play off midfielders running off you. So as much as we're criticising Arsenal and the players themselves, I think the manager was way out of his depth yesterday, Arteta, and we look at it last week again and how weak they are. I mentioned about the centre half issues and him not addressing them, and everybody in the world can see Arsenal are weak defensively and have been for a period of time. And whatever about coming in with a philosophy and trying to play, the first thing you have to do if you take over a football club is that you don't concede goals and that you're strong defensively and build out from there. He's trying to do it the other way around and have attacking players and play a nice football, but yet be weak as anything at the back. And I would worry seriously, because that's two or three times now, and even go back to last season, where there's evidence of him not actually addressing the main issues, and they're the main issues. And you look at it yesterday, Chelsea had a field day yesterday.
Alan, you're obviously a big fan of Arteta's, but Jurgen Klopp is starting to get, as Liverpool have flown, a bit like he had 2 years ago.
Yeah, Klopp's brilliant, Ruby. I like Klopp a little bit more than I like Arteta, yeah. But I do, yeah, Klopp's brilliant manager. And this is the one thing we mentioned.
Well, he did go by Van Dijk, and there you go.
Yeah, and obviously the money helped, and the business did with offloading Coutinho to get those two players in. But the key thing about that, Marie, he addressed the issues. He knew what he needed. He had everything else around him. He knew he needed a centre-half. He knew he needed a goalkeeper. Went out and got the best, and look at the difference. But the one thing, Ruby, with them, I suppose, that we all said in the previews was, and particularly me, I felt if you get the players back, and I used to maintain this a lot last year, if you got the full complement of players, I still think Liverpool are as good as a City or a Chelsea. It's about keeping them fit. I think the area where are slightly weaker than those two at the moment is the strength and depth of the squad. But certainly if you got your best 11 and you look at the emergence of young Harvey Elliott at the weekend, absolutely brilliant. He's only a young kid, but I think Liverpool will be there or thereabouts, particularly if they keep them all fit.
Well, they've sold Shaqiri now, Stephen. Do you think they need to buy a replacement for him, or is someone like Elliott, as Alan mentioned, they're ready to step up?
I think Elliott's done himself so many favours. He put in a really stellar performance and just looked assured, controlled his passing. Everything about him looked good, and he definitely looks like one for the future. But, you know, it is the squad, and that's what we're looking at. I mean, you compare Liverpool to other teams, the Cities and the Chelseas, you know, every player on the bench is almost as good as the player starting, and Liverpool just don't have that. So when they do lose a couple of key cogs, which, you know, is inevitable over the course of the season, you're going to lose players, or form is going to drop, you don't have that quality to come in, and that's maybe where they can invest. And the club have probably let themselves down in the sense that they've let the players and the manager down, that they haven't gone, and like the big signings of Van Dijk and Alisson, amazing, but they haven't strengthened on the squad realistically to compete. Like I said, on 11 they compete with anybody and they be up there, but when they have those injuries that they might find it a bit difficult.
And obviously the big spenders are Man City, and they were described yesterday as five-star City after winning 5-0. But one stat I thought stood out this morning was Liverpool's pass accuracy was 83%, Chelsea 88%, but Man City were 93% with their pass accuracy. Was that more reflective of Norwich or Man City?
Probably a bit of both, to be honest with you, Ruby, but it's the emphasis that Guardiola puts on that. And even I think I was listening to an interview, was it before or after the match, and I'm talking about the ball, basically he wants the players, rather than actually the players moving around, all the players are set positionally and it's the ball that does all the movement rather than the players running here, there and everywhere. And you look at them when they play, they're phenomenal to watch. It was only Norwich. Obviously there's tougher tests to come for them, but all they can do was go out and beat what's in front of them, and it was impressive. And I suppose the big positive was Grealish, even though it hit his backside and went in, but for 100 million he'll take that, he will any day of the week. But that's a big positive that he got up and running, and as I say, they're only going to get stronger. But even as I mentioned last week, the one thing I like about what we saw, even and following up on this week, is that I do think it's going to be competitive this year with three or four teams.
Stephen, you played with Grealish. Looking at him there now in that Man City team, how do you think he's fitting in? Do you think he needs to do more to fit in a little bit better, or is he doing all right?
No, he's doing okay, and it will take time to adjust. He's going to have to play the way Pep wants to play, and it's just finding the role for him that's going to suit him. I mean, me and Alan, we've dissected this to pieces, just saying that, you know, he plays a role. He barely played a role for Villa, where he could just go anywhere getting the ball, and they would try and find them. Where City, there's so many good players. It's all about finding your space and, you know, using the best in those areas. But the way City play and the way they pass the ball, like, it's so obvious. Like, how many goals do you see where pass goes out wide, comes into the box, and it's a tap in at the far post? Because they move it so quickly and they pull so many teams apart. Sterling scores goals like that. That's what Grealish is going to get. He needs to be able to get on the end of those things as well. So even though he was in the right space, and it did, like Alan said, it came off his backside, it's one of those that's where he will get goals from, and that's where his stats will get higher, because City would be always putting balls in those areas. And it's just when he gets on it, that bit of brilliance that he does slightly different to the other players that will make him stand out.
Right place, right time is where Grealish was, but poor Fred was in the wrong place when he scored an OG for Man United at the weekend. My prediction, they would be on top for a while, Alan. Didn't go very far, did it?
No, I was waiting for this one, Ruby, so I was. I was waiting for this. I was watching the match yesterday, and I says, wait till I talk to that Ruby Walsh fella. You told me last week that they'd be on top and that they'd win about 4 or 5 on the trot. And the falling at the first hurdle. So I watched the game yesterday.
The last.
I didn't want to mention that, Ruby, to be honest. But looking at the game yesterday, and it goes back to the argument we used to have, and like, you look at, obviously we're comparing them against to Chelsea and to City, and that's the level that they obviously have to try and overcome, and I still think they're a bit off that. But looking at it yesterday, and this is what we go back to: Martial, Fred, you're bringing on Lingard, Lindelof, Matic, his legs are gone, you're carrying these fellas. Now, they still should be beating Southampton, but as I say, you're never going to overcome the likes of a Chelsea or a Man City with the quality that they have and the money that they're paying for players and the squad depth that they have. Fred just won't cut it. I'm sorry, but he won't at that level. Yes, he'll be fine, he'll be a steady Eddie Premier League player, but he's not going to cut it to overcome the likes of a Chelsea and a Man City.
Well, we should probably whisper this, Alan, but Pogba had another really good game.
Pogba did well, but it's no good if you're drawing one Almery and him just kind of topping up on a showreel. But he did, to be fair, he played well. But as I say, when you have the rest of them around him, that's the problem. And you look at, I go back to it with Solskjaer again, Solskjaer's not going to take Man United back to the top. I'm blue in the face saying it, and he won't, and there's nothing to change my mind on that.
Fair enough, Alan. But anyway, Stephen, what about Spurs and Wolves? I felt Spurs got lucky. Harry Kane came on, probably should have scored, but to me, I think poor Wolves were a little unlucky against Spurs on Saturday.
They were. Wolves created a lot of good chances and pulled Tottenham apart. Jimenez, good to see him back as well. And, you know, all over the pitch, they looked like they were a threat. They looked like they were capable of actually getting a decent win. And Spurs, definitely a penalty, and Ali puts away, which is good for them, and a win on away on the road, which is nice for Spurs and for Spurs fans. Kane probably should have scored. But yeah, they were lucky, and you know, it was a hard worked, gritty performance for them, and it's never easy going to the Molyneux to get a result. But Wolves would be disappointed they didn't come out with something, because they did play some really good stuff and they pulled Tottenham apart at times. But Højbjerg, I just look, you know, you talk about midfield for Man United, you talk about midfield for Arsenal and screening teams, like Højbjerg is an absolute workhorse in there. I think he's fantastic for them.
Yeah, he looked exceptional at the weekend. But guys, before we let you go, there was one big talking point from the weekend. Both Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Jurgen Klopp were giving out about the new interpretation of trivial things. Alan, you first, as a former player, are you in favour of the basketball version, as Ole put it, or going towards the rugby version, which he also has it at now?
Yeah, he was probably stretching it with the rugby version as well. But if you like the ones, I was disappointed with Klopp's comments, because it's a contact sport. We need that, Ruby. You can't get away from the fact that it's a contact sport. And if we get to, as you say, that reference, the basketball way, well, then it's not football in my eyes, and it never will be. And you look at the example of, I suppose, the situation where Bruno Fernandes, was it a free, was it not a free? To be fair, it could have been given as a free, but I don't mind what the referees have implemented so far. We criticised them a lot last year, especially with their implementation of the VAR. I think so far it's worked quite well. And if they're willing to let more things go in the game flow, I'm all for that, I have to say, because the game's been quite good so far. So as much as I'd be the first one to criticise referees, I think they're doing fine at the moment.
Stephen, would you agree with Jurgen that football has gone 10 or 15 years backwards?
No, absolutely not. I think it's nice to see football actually be physical and become a game again, that, you know, you can actually touch people and, you know, the refs are letting things go. It was becoming pathetic. Some of the tackles were going in and players were flying around the place, and it was just embarrassing that they were giving free kicks for willy-nilly, and it was ruining the game. Like, and, you know, you don't want to be an old head, say, oh, back in my day, but, you know, there's certain things that you want to keep, and that's a physical contact, a game that's actually in your face, and, you know, players, you know, get up, they don't just roll around when they're kicked. And for me, football needs contact. It needs to be physical. It needs to be a sport that, you know, players are out there giving their all and, you know, at times let things go, let it flow. And I think they're getting it right. I think it's important. Like, we have to protect players, but there was nothing dangerous. There was nothing, you know, really harsh or horrible that went on that was let go. It was just innocuous things that were pushes or pulls. And I think that's part of the game.
I think it's everyone just needs to adjust. And Alan, before we finish up, wasn't a bad weekend for the Republic of Ireland when you think about it. James McLean with the goal, Aaron Connolly playing, and Shane Duffy again, another good game.
Yeah, fair play to Shane Duffy, because even as we mentioned last week, obviously what he's come back from, and he had a lot of kind of turmoil in his life, I suppose, but certainly to battle back. And I think he mentioned it himself in one of the interviews that he was at rock bottom. So to come back and show the character that he has, and I think he mentioned also that the Premier League dream might have been over for him, but he showed a huge amount of character, as you say, to come back. And he's backing it up with the performances, which is most important. And obviously we've three big games coming up, Marie. Stephen Kenny will be over the moon. We saw the clips of him, or the photograph. He was obviously over there watching him at the weekend as well. And Connolly too. So, yeah, it can only be good for us. And fair play to Duffy. He deserves an enormous amount of credit for that.
And Stephen, just on Jack Byrne, a little bit of news before we came on air that he could be set to leave Apoel Nicosia. It doesn't seem to be sure where he's going to go, potentially to Charlotte, but that doesn't look like until 2022. That's in the MLS. And a short-term move to the UK seems to be a possible option. It hasn't worked out for him over there. Of course, Mick McCarthy leaving straight away once he arrived and that injury. But just to get him back playing football would be a big boost.
Yeah, just for himself, for his own headspace, he needs to be back playing regularly, playing level. You know, before he went away, he was in a really good place. He was breaking to the Irish team. He was pushing for a starting place. He was getting a lot of plaudits, and he was, you know, that creative Jack Byrne that we all want to see. You know, he talked going off and playing at a higher standard or in leagues that were able to play in Europe was going to enhance his career, enhance him, pushing it in. And obviously, Mick McCarthy was the big draw. But that was, you know, for that to happen the way it did was pretty rough on him. And then the injury came along, so just getting back to playing. It'd be nice if he got into England to, at some level, to play. Obviously, to come back to Ireland would be great for him as well. But I think that if he got into a decent level in the UK and was able to play, and, you know, I think when he's travelled, he's struggled in the UK in the past. So it'd be nice for him to be able to settle down and show that he's capable of playing at a high level, and then, you know, then bringing that to the Irish team as well.
Okay, well, it's time for us to take a break. Stephen and Alan, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back shortly to talk golf with Gary Murphy.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, and Gary Murphy has joined us on the line. Gary, it was a big, big weekend in golf, and especially for Leona Maguire, who's become the first Irish player to make the Solheim Cup team.
It was. It was historic, no doubt, and great inspiration for all young lady golfers, you know, to have some, you know, superstar to look up to. I think the way it was handled was really good as well. Katrina Matthew, the captain, told her, you know, on Monday that she was in the team, and quietly, which really helped her just concentrate on, you know, the final major of the year. But it's just a great story. I mean, the Solheim was in Ireland back in 2013, and Leona was only a kid playing in the junior Solheim, you know, and you dream of these things happening for you. We've been, you know, saturated, I guess, with Ryder Cups over the years, and this will bring a whole new audience to the Solheim as well, and it's great. It's great for the women's game. You know, the Curtis Cup is on this week as well, and we've two superstar golfers, and Lauren Walsh and Annabelle Wilson, and that Lauren obviously played in Carnoustie, so it's, you know, it's great for the women's game. And Leona's the kind of superstar at the top, and richly deserved as well. You know, she's gotten a pick, but it's just because of the weight of the LPGA Tour compared to the European Tour. So the captain is trying to get the best players there. First six, she just missed out on that by a couple of spots. So richly deserved. She's eighth on the LPGA Tour rankings. She's a world-class player. I think to put it into perspective, you know, we kind of glory about Shane doing so well, and he's 40th in the world rankings, and Leona's 43rd. So that's kind of where she's at in the game.
Well, you did say, Gary, it's a really good story, and it definitely is. Let's hear this clip of Leona on how she found out the news from Solheim Cup captain Katrina Mathieu.
Yeah, actually, I played with her. I played 9 holes with her on Monday, and she kind of told me that she was thinking of picking me in, just to have a good week and all the rest. And then we got the final confirmation her last night. So obviously it was a big week last week at the British Open. She was trying to focus on that and kind of block Solheim out a little bit. And yeah, I mean, it's the icing on the cake of what's already been a really, really good year. I've played really well the last few weeks and that, and last couple of months. And I mean, it's something that you hope you're going to have a chance with, but you never know. I was trying to qualify for the team off of world rankings and that, and I knew it was going to be sort of touch and go. And as a rookie, you're never guaranteed to get a pick, and you don't exactly know what the captain's looking for. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge honour and to be involved, and delighted that Katrina thought that I was worthwhile of a pick this morning.
Leona, of course, was 13th at the Women's Open at the weekend as well, but the final round of the Northern Trust is underway. Gary, Rory is flying at 4 under, Seamus Power's at 1 under, and Shane Lowry even has just teed off.
Yeah, it's a Monday finish with the weather, and I guess they're just hoping it is probably going to lash rain at some stage because of the remains of that storm. But it's a huge day for Lowry. You know, he's in tight fifth position at the moment. He's just part of the first. You know, if he can post a number, it guarantees a lot of things. Obviously, Leon has made the Solheim, so Shane could get the job done for his, you know, first start in the Ryder Cup tonight if he can hang in there. Hopefully finish top five, you know, even have a chance to win. He's only 3 back, so you never know, it's possible. But I think it's a huge day for Shane Lowry, and hopefully he can do the business.
After shooting 62 on Saturday, was the day off yesterday a hindrance or a bonus?
I think maybe a bonus because, you know, that break, it's always really hard to follow up a super low round like that. So the fact that he had a day off yesterday, and obviously couldn't do a whole lot with the weather, so he wouldn't have played any golf, just watch Limerick destroy Cork. I would say that was about it.
At least he'd something good to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, today's a new day, and he's playing with Justin Thomas, so it's a big game. Get out there and just drive into it and give it a go. He's more than good enough to shoot, you know, something again in the mid-60s, and you just never know.
With a bit of luck, you will. That is live, of course, on Sky TV now, if you do have it. Gary, thanks a million for taking our call. I think that's about all we have time for. Tara Stewart is up next. Myself and Marie will be back tomorrow evening. Thanks for listening.
Your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.